Okay. First of all, I suggest that you try, all of you, to find the website of the IsraeliPeaceInitiative.com, and you will see there are many articles and analysis of the Arab Peace Initiative. I happen to be one of the founders of this group, and I'll be very happy to tell you more about this. But I completely, with all due respect, and I respect Yossi Klein Halevi, I completely disagree with him. First of all, the Arab Peace Initiative is not detailed because it leaves so much room for negotiations with the Israelis. And I hear from, actually from officials in Israel, that the problem with the Arab Peace Initiative is that they expect us to take it as is, which is not the case. They said again and again that it's open to negotiations. The last statement of the Qatari Prime Minister made it very clear that the 67 lines are not sacred and open for negotiations on the basis of swap. And swap is important not only because it offers some territorial compromise, 2% here or there. It is a kind of a creative formula that allows the Palestinians to tell their people and the Arab world and the Hamas that they are getting back the 67 lines along the lines of the Declaration of Independence from 88 of the Palestinian National Council. And it offers the Israelis at the same time to say that we are not going back to the 67 lines. So this is essential for any kind of final status agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. This, I would say, even a precondition, this formula. The other thing is the refugees. What the Arab Peace Initiative is suggesting is that the solution for the refugee problem will be just and agreed upon with the Israelis, which means actually that Israel has a veto over the formula, over the solution of the refugee problem, which of course Israel will not accept the right of return or the interpretation of the Hamas of the right of return. What is very interesting is that again, we have the Hamas and the Israeli radical right screaming and shouting against the Arab Peace Initiative and saying that the Hamas actually said that the statement of Abu Mazen, that he accepts the Qatari statement, is a betrayal of the Palestinian cause, which calls for the right of return. A few years ago, when Muammar Gaddafi was still with us, he tried to amend the Arab Peace Initiative in a summit that took place in Tripoli, adding the right of return. And it was rejected, I can't say unanimously, because he voted in favor of this. I think that the fact that the Syrians, who were kind of spoilers, they were playing kind of spoilers in the last few years, that they are not members of the Arab League right now and are not relevant, this makes it even the opportunity even more special, more unique than before. So I think that the other thing is that we have to keep in mind is that the Arab Peace Initiative and the support of the Arab League makes it much easier for the Palestinian to accept any kind of compromise that will be required for an agreement without the backing of the Arab League and also the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, 57 members of the Islamic countries that has endorsed the Arab Peace Initiative makes it much easier for the Palestinian. And of no less importance is the fact that the Arab Peace Initiative was reaffirmed after the revolution in the Arab world by President Morsi, by all the Arab, the other members of the Arab League, which means that the Arab Peace Initiative has survived all those new events in the Middle East and shows us that it is a very resilient and firm formula that is still waiting for us.
Thank you, Akiva. Again, a quick reminder, in order to ask the question, what you do is you dial 5-star. That alerts me that you are that you would like to ask a question, and that I will call on you. Our next question comes from Yonatan Shapiro.
Yes, Akiva, I wanted to ask you with regard. I was one of the people who were quite optimistic after the election, but it was clear that Bibi is not going to move without some pressure from Yesh Atid and Yair Lapid. And one of my biggest disappointments is that it doesn't look like Yair Lapid care about peace with the Palestinian at all. And the last proof is that he didn't take any one shekel from the settlers while he collected a lot from the poor and the sick in Israel. What is your take about that?
I'm not disappointed because I didn't have any expectations from Lapid. But I have expectations from other people in the faction, in Yesh Atid faction, such as Yaakov Peri, whose name is on the list of the founders of the Israeli Peace Initiative, Yael German, who comes from Meretz, and others who would be able to join this conference call as members of Americans for Peace Now, or Shalom Achshav in Israel. I still believe that if the moment of truth will come and there will be an American blueprint on the table, and it will be clear that Netanyahu is the spoiler and Netanyahu is the no partner, then they will raise their voices. If not Lapid, the others. The good news is that eventually Shelly Yechimovich, the Labour chairman of the Labour Party, chairwoman of the Labour Party, has decided to meet with Abu Mazen, and she went to Ramallah. And actually, she admitted that it was a mistake to ignore the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And unfortunately, she listened to our friend Stanley Greenberg, who gave her this advice. And she said that the Labour Party lost 4 seats because of this strategy of ignoring the peace process and focusing on social and economic issues. I also believe that Tzipi Livni will sooner than later, she is now the Israeli chief negotiator, she will have to report to her voters and to the Israeli public whether Netanyahu is serious about those negotiations, about the two-state solution, or to call the bluff. And this is actually what she told me when she decided to join the government. She said, the good news will be that Netanyahu is serious and we will resume the negotiations. The bad news, which is better than the ambiguity, is that that's the way she put it, that eventually we will know if Bibi was serious when he made a statement in Bar Ilan in 2009. Actually, in June, we will celebrate 4 years of the 2009 Bar Ilan statement. And this will maybe require a reshuffle in the government. The fact that Shelly Yechimovich also met with Aryeh Deri, the leader of Shas, and there were statements from members, senior members of Shas, that Israel should accept the Arab Peace Initiative, this may be interpreted as a message to Netanyahu that we don't even have to go back to the ballots. There is an alternative, an alternate government with Shas, Labor, Meretz, and Yesh Atid.
Thank you, Akiva.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Samira Shaheen. Please go ahead, Samira.
Oh, hi. This has been very informative, and I am wondering, I won't go as far as say the freeze on settlements and how possible is this. We're still talking about the peace initiatives and going back to the table after 49 years. But what's really concerning me is that Ben Hanana, the Palestinian suburbs in a part of East Jerusalem, and, you know, the plan of moving along with the 60 new housing units for settlers. What do you feel the possibility of stopping this and dismantling some of these settlements?
Good question. Actually, next week, I think that we are going to celebrate 10 years of maybe, celebrate is not the right word, maybe commemorate 10 years of the roadmap. And the roadmap that was submitted by President Bush, the Republican president, to Sharon, to the Sharon government, where Netanyahu was one of the, its senior members of the cabinet as a minister of finance, mentioned also a complete freeze, adopting the Mitchell report of the settlements, including natural growth, and removing all the illegal outposts that were erected after March 2001. Now, this was turned into a Security Council resolution number 1515. You can Google it. Without even mentioning one single reservation out of the 14 reservations that were put forward by the Sharon government. Interestingly enough, the reservations did not include any mention of the moratorium of settlements and removal of the illegal outposts, which means that it was accepted by the Israeli government. Now, I wonder why, and actually I mentioned this in an article I published in my new home in Al-Monitor. I was asking myself why President Obama does not use this act that this was submitted by, this was the division of President Bush, to create a bipartisan coalition around the roadmap, and if the Republicans will try to raise their voice against Obama for putting pressure on Netanyahu regarding the settlements, Obama could just say, listen, I did copy-paste of President Bush's roadmap. I don't know if he refrains from doing it because it's a kind of ABC, anything but Clinton approach. So now we have an ABB, anything but Bush approach. But here you go. I urge you to ask this question, your congressman.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Akiva. Before I could continue to the next question, I just want to give you a chance, Akiva, to plug Al-Monitor, your new home. You retired from Haaretz about a year ago, and you're now with Al-Monitor. A few words, what it is.
Yeah. It was just 6 months ago. Al-Monitor is an American website, actually. It is based, the headquarters are based in Washington. It belongs to Mr. Jamal Daniel from Houston, Texas. a Republican, was born in Syria, grew up in Lebanon. He's Christian Syrian, and his vision was to create a website, a newspaper that will offer something else than what Sheldon Adelson is offering to the Israelis. He started actually in the website in Lebanon, Iraq, Turkey, and Palestine, and Israel Palestine was started last December. We have, I think, the best list of analysts in the Middle East. We have people who left Maariv and senior Israeli, Palestinian, Egyptian. Now we will start Egypt Pulse and hopefully also Iran Pulse. And we started actually exchanging views between us. So this is a kind of an interactive Arab-Israeli peace initiative starting in the media, and hopefully this can lead to maybe some exchanges between politicians and a platform for that dialogue in the Middle East.
Thanks. Again, to ask a question, you dial 5-star to signal to me that you'd like to ask a question. The next one comes from Mitchell Plitnik.
Thanks, Ori. Hello, Akiva. I wanted to ask you about the situation with Syria and also how it doesn't seem like Israel has many good options or hopes for good outcomes in Syria, and how that might be interplaying also with the situation with Iran.
Oh, this is a big one. I will tell you that if you ask Netanyahu how he would like this to end, it reminds me and I'm not proud of this, what Menachem Begin, when he was prime minister, what he answered the question of whom he would like to, which party he would like to win the war between Iran and Iraq, and he said, "I wish both of them success." And I think this is the way Netanyahu is looking at this, because the border between Israel, Syria, Israel and Lebanon is not quiet. Netanyahu is quiet because his argument is that this is not the time to rock the boat. We have to see what's happening. Actually, this was also his attitude before the elections in Egypt. He said, "This is not the time to rock the boat. We have to see what happens in the elections in Egypt." And surprisingly enough, as I mentioned before, the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood, the big brother of Hamas, won the elections, and the fact that the Israeli flag is still flying in Cairo, and they can still catch a flight from Tel Aviv to Cairo. This shows that the peace between Israelis and Arabs is immune to this kind of storms, political storms. What happens in Syria, of course, is a message to the average Israeli that the Middle East is a wild west, is a wild place, and that we can't afford to take risks because it's a bad neighborhood. So this is, in my view, what's happening in Syria is bad news for people like you in Israel. The fact that the international community comes to terms with the fact that almost 100,000 people, civilians, were killed in Syria is also bad news to Israelis, who say we can't trust anyone. We can trust only ourselves because we live in a cool world. But the good news is the fact that most of the Arab countries are looking at the butchery, the genocide in Syria, the way peaceniks in Israel look at this. The fact that Syria was, that Assad was thrown out of the out of the Arab League, this reminds me of the 91 first Gulf War, where the American administration, the Bush senior administration, used this to build an Israeli Arab pragmatic Arab coalition to against Saddam Hussein, and used this as a follow, he followed up with the Madrid conference in October of 91, which led to the Oslo negotiations. So it much depends what we do, we make out of this. There are risks here, but I can also see opportunities that both the pragmatic Sunnis and even pragmatic Shiites are concerned about the Somalization of Syria, where you have both Al-Qaeda and Iran trying to take advantage of this chaos.
Thank you, Akiva. Mitch, by the way, who asked the question, Mitchell Plitnik is the author of The Third Way, which is a very interesting blog. I would recommend you take a look at it. Our next question comes from Yossi, whose last name I didn't get.
Ken.
Yossi. Yossi Ken, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Akiva Eldar. First, a quick reference question. You mentioned about some Security Council resolution vis-a-vis the, I believe, the settlements, and I didn't get the number, 1550 or 1515?
No, 1515.
1515, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Now my question, this is, I was following the Israeli politics, and I learned from the last coalition negotiations that actually the two states have been omitted as a request by the Bennett party, the Jewish Homeland Party, and also my understanding that majority member of the government are opposing even two states, and which is basically that as long as there will not be any meaningful pressure from the Obama administration, nothing serious will happen on the Israeli government side. However, I wanted to know, based on the political reality in the U.S., do you see any hope that can be a meaningful pressure from Obama administrations? Because I still remember the speech that Netanyahu gave at May of 2011, 2 years ago, to the joint session of Congress, where he gave a standing ovation that not even President of the United States get. So I wonder if you see any hope that actually can be a pressure from U.S. administration based on a political reality here.
Yeah. Okay. I am afraid I didn't mention the fact that the Palestinians mention a deadline for this round of negotiations, which is June 6th. Until then, we need, and this is Kerry's number one challenge, is to find the magic formula that will allow to send invitations to the parties. On one hand, mentioning the 67 lines as a basis for negotiations, and I repeat, basis for negotiations, not the outcome of the negotiations, because it leaves room for swap, for territorial swap, and to at the same time to satisfy Netanyahu with regard to his demand that the Palestinians will recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Now, the way Netanyahu puts it is he said, this is not a precondition. This I am willing to give it up if the Palestinians will give up their demand that the result of the negotiations will be the 67 lives. The trade-off that he is suggesting is that if the Palestinians insist that the invitations will include the 67 lives, I insist that they will include a Jewish state. Now, the Palestinians, I believe, will never. Well, in politics, you have to be careful with using this word never, but I am willing to bet the little money I have that the Palestinians will now spell out the phrase Jewish state, because this will alienate 1.5 million Palestinians who live in Israel and the refugees who believe that they have the right to this land. So it has to be a kind of a Kissingerian, ambiguous and constructive ambiguity solution. But going back to the American role, I don't see the United States, Obama, putting his foot down. I know one or two things about American politics, and in 1.5 years, we're going to have midterm elections where it is, I understand, touch and go between the Republicans and the Democrats. There will be pressure on Obama not to bring it to a head-on collision with Netanyahu. And his advisors probably are telling him that this is not going to work. Pressure will not change Netanyahu's mind. He has just won the elections. As you say, he's got Bennett on his side. But American pressure or a clear American message can make a difference, because it can penetrate into the soft parts, the soft belly of this government, which is Yesh Atid, and separate between the brothers, so-called, Bennett and Lapid. If this will be followed also with a clear message to the Israeli public opinion that lack of peace has to do with lack of social justice, this can work. Right now, the mainstream constituency in Israel doesn't really see the linkage between peace and welfare, peace and the solution to the economic problems, to the great deficit. So to wrap it up, I would say right now the price that Netanyahu has to pay in order to change the reality between us and the Palestinians, the price is looks to him higher than the status quo, than doing anything. And the game changer is President Obama. I fully agree. Not the Arab League and not Abu Mazen. The game changer can also be another intifada, because Abu Mazen is turning 77, and Salam Fayyad has already decided to retire. And if Abu Mazen retires and he hands over the keys of the Palestinian Authority to Israel, or he calls for elections and the Hamas will take over, this will be the end of it. So perhaps the Israeli public will wake up before this happens.
Thank you very much, Akiva. We're nearing the 45-minute line that was allotted for this conversation. I have one question that I wanted to ask you, which probably will elicit a short answer, and that is, what is the division of labor in the negotiations between Tzipi Livni, Minister Livni, who has been given the authority to serve as the one responsible for negotiations with the Palestinians in this cabinet, and Prime Minister Netanyahu?
As far as I understand, Shelly Yachimovich was very eager to form a coalition together with Tzipi Livni and with the Orthodox parties. She has managed to build some trust between her and the Orthodox Shas and Yadut HaTorah, the ultra-Orthodox Ashkenazi party. On the other hand, there was also a possibility to form a kind of a unity government with the Likud and the Labour Party. This is what Tzipi Livni tried to do, to convince Shelly Yachimovich and Lapid to join Netanyahu and form a broader coalition and force Netanyahu to move forward. Unfortunately, Lapid and Bennett decided to, right at the beginning of the negotiations, to form a bloc against the Labour Party and to force on Netanyahu to give up the historic alliance, this is the, you remember, Ori, the way we used to call it, with the Orthodox parties, and leave them out. Now, as I said before, I think this is still possible, that Netanyahu will make this historic decision like Sharon did, and will say goodbye to Bennett and to a significant part of the Likud faction that includes people who are even more radical than Bennett, such as Feiglin, Chotobeli, Danon, and others. The way Sharon did it when he formed Kadima, after a while, he decided to disengage Gaza. So I think we are very close to this moment of truth where we can see a completely new government with Shelly Yachimovich and Tzipi Livni leading to a kind of a peace coalition. But the only thing, if I believed in God, I would pray that this will happen.
Thank you very much, Akiva. 45 minutes flew by, as it always happens when we have you. Thank you very much for joining us. I want to
meet you in El Monitor.
Yes, absolutely, El Monitor. I want to wish you and everyone else on the call a happy Shavuot, Chag Sameach, and see you soon on another APN briefing call.
This Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.